What is up from the SNY studios in New York City? Welcome to another edition of the Knicks Blog Podcast. I'm Anthony Donahue, joined alongside, as always, by my partner in crime, Moak Hamilton. Moak, what's up?
I'm chilling, man. I'm happy to be here. Happy that the playoffs are upon us, baby.
And as we tape the show on Friday, the playoffs start on Saturday afternoon. And it should be fun, man. Pretty few good, exciting first-round matchups. Should be a lot of fun.
Listen,
as always.
I'm going to let you know, we're going to write down all the predictions.
Yes, at the end of the show.
We'll and the that. Loser between me and you got to buy Pizza Supreme for everybody.
For the first round.
Well, we'll discuss a little
yeah,
more.
Yeah, yeah, we can do that.
I'm going to think about it a little bit more.
We'll have our producer, Jason Pateri, make the bet, and we'll make our predictions.
Somebody's going to get free pizza, and I ain't going to be the one buying it.
At the end of the show, we've made it easier for you to listen to all of the SNY.TV original podcasts now, Moak. If you are a fan of the Mets, Jets, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to SNY.TV Audio Network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. That's the SNY.TV Audio Network, and please make sure to rate and review our channel. So how awesome is that, Moak? All the podcasts there at once for any of your favorite New York sports
teams. That's pretty dope. It's pretty convenient. But when you go there and you start reviewing stuff, just make sure you review the TKB podcast.
Absolutely. TKB podcast number one. Let's get it there. But that's definitely a good idea, because if you might be interested in some Jets talk, some Islanders talk, it's all there right in front of you. So make sure to subscribe and get that done. But let's start with the New York Knicks, and that's what this show is about. They had their exit interviews yesterday on Thursday. Before we even get into all the quotes,
I know you're not happy right
now. No, I just, for better or for worse, when it comes to exit interviews and media day, I don't get too high or too low.
Okay, but what about, so the exit interviews, yeah, you know, Carmelo said some very interesting things. Some very good questions, I think, were asked to Carmelo.
Yeah.
But the major thing that everyone is talking about coming out of Baggy Day.
Phil saying 11 ring. What rings does the media have?
Not even that. Let's just talk about Kurt Rambis generally, right? Because I know, Anthony, that you yourself are not a major fan of him being brought back as the head coach.
I don't think most Knicks fans are.
Well, and everything that we saw coming out of media day makes it seem like Phil is not even interested in thinking about somebody else, which is surprising to me.
Yeah, and Phil Jackson says he hasn't reached out to anybody yet, and I'm sure at some point he should. I mean, that's his job. He's the general manager of the New York Knicks. So even if he does hire Kurt Rambis, his job should be to reach out to other candidates, even if he's not that friendly with them. See, you know, if Tom Thibodeau, Mark Jackson, Scotty Brooks, these guys are available, sit down, have a meal, pick these guys' brains, because sometimes the best employees you may hire, you maybe weren't friends with them. So maybe, you know, you may meet with them and be like, wow, we have the same philosophy on this. We can work together. So you shouldn't, and Phil Jackson said this, basically he just wants to interview somebody he knows. That's stupid. You should talk to, you know, get to know some of these guys. Maybe have a lunch date with Scotty Brooks, and you're like, wow, maybe he would be a good hire, or whoever it may be.
I agree, and I think what's most interesting, and like the way I feel about it, and the way that I look at it, is I think one of the fouls that was committed by the Knicks organization back when Mike D'Antoni was here. So when you think about some of the greater coaches of our generation, right, and the guy that immediately comes to mind for me is George Karl, right, Greg Popovich, Larry Brown even. What made these guys special was not Popovich, but George Karl and Larry Brown. These guys coached a bunch of different teams.
Yes.
And if you go back and you look at the way those teams played, look at George Karl, think about how his Nuggets played, how his Kings played, how his Seattle Supersonics played. These teams played different brands of basketball, and they won games in different ways.
Well, Pat Riley with the Lakers to the Knicks.
Exactly. That's a perfect example. And the hallmark of a great coach is someone who's able to adapt to his personnel.
No question.
Mike D'Antoni ain't do that when he was here.
No, he really didn't. He tried to run a fast-paced offense with a slow point guard in Chris Duhon,
right,
which did not really work.
And when they got players in here that they felt didn't match that system, they tried to get them out. They tried to get players to match the system. And that's what it seems like Phil is trying to do with these Knicks. And all I know, I mean, to a certain extent, you have to give some reverence to those 11 rings. But Phil needs to be right. Whatever he does, whichever coach he brings in here, whichever players he brings in here, you're going to push Aaron Aflalo out the door? Whatever you do, you better be right. They got no more time to take chances with these New York
right,
Knicks.
Because now that we're on Phil Jackson's third offseason as the general manager of the New York Knicks, there's a lot of fans out there that talk about, oh, this team is rebuilding. And listen, I'm not against the rebuilding. I can handle it. The last 15 years, Knicks have been rebuilding since 2001. But I never heard of a team signing a superstar player or a star player, whatever you consider Carmelo Anthony, at the very least, he's a star player to just about a max deal, and then say, oh, we're actually rebuilding. I've never heard of that. That, to me, is absurd, Mo.
It seems counterintuitive.
It's weird.
It is weird.
And then Melo talked about, listen, we might not see the best of Kristaps Porzingis for another 5-6 years, and that's okay. But Melo talked about, let's take advantage of my window right now because Melo might be in his prime for another 2 or 3 years, and he's right. If you have Carmelo Anthony, who is, we both agree, is still in his prime, take advantage of that.
One of the things I love about the NBA, it's like no matter what, you have to watch, you know? And people are going to say you can't do it or it can't be done until someone actually does it.
Right.
So Carmelo. Carmelo's going to be 32. I think his birthday is like May 29th or something
late
like
May,
that.
Yep.
I just know it's 1984. I know the year.
Yes.
So he's going to be 32 in a couple of months, right? And you say, okay, well, you re-sign this guy. It hasn't worked. You're not going to win with him. That is true 98% of the time. But if you look at Dirk Nowitzki's Mavericks, all right, you look at that team that won a title in 2011.
And Dirk was about 33, 34.
Dirk was a bit older. But the thing is with those guys is that team had failed miserably with Dirk.
Yeah, they did.
And Mark Cuban and Donnie Nelson, they just kept plugging. They kept on getting spare parts from other teams, and they put them together, and boom, they won a title. Now, they didn't turn it around overnight. But my point is, what I'm saying is, just because you have a guy there for 4 years and he's over 30 and it hasn't worked out doesn't mean it can't work. Which is why this summer is so important. You know what I mean?
I think you can win with Carmelo Anthony. I'm not saying that being a blind fan. I think you can.
But you got to do something now.
And that's the thing. And so many people are talking about, well, now it's this.
It starts with the coach.
It starts with the coach. And so many people are talking about now, well, it's this rebuild and going to take another 3 years. And what? And if you really wanted to do that, Moke, and that's fine if you did, and Tommy Beer really, well, he was the most adamant about this 3 years, 2 years ago.
Not re-signing Carmelo.
And if you're going to rebuild and really tear it down, that's okay. Then don't bring back Carmelo Anthony. And as much as I love Carmelo Anthony, I agree. If you really want to do this really full rebuild, you should just let Carmelo Anthony go. But if you have Carmelo Anthony, like Melo said yesterday in the exit interviews up in Westchester, take advantage of this window.
I disagree with you.
On what?
I disagree with you and I disagree with Tommy Beer. I got no problem with you re-signing Carmelo.
No, either do I. But if you're going to sign him, then now talk about some rebuild.
No.
What's the point of having him?
I got no problem with you re-signing him and then trading him.
Well, if that's the case, that's different. That hasn't happened.
Because you're getting value back for him.
Well, let's see.
So what I'm saying is, if you have Carmelo right now and Phil goes up and says, hey, man, look, I know you want me to hire Tom Thibodeau. All right, the secret is out, okay? We got reports out there saying that Carmelo wants Tom Thibodeau up in there, right? We happen to think Tom Thibodeau's the right guy. But if Phil says, look, Carmelo, this is not your team. I know you say you want decision-making. No, it's my team. And if you don't like that, you tell me where you want to go. If Phil lays it out to Carmelo like that and he sends Carmelo to the Clippers after they lose in the playoffs.
In the second round.
Right, and they end up getting picks back from the 76ers or the Celtics in a massive four-team deal, then re-signing Carmelo was a stroke of genius.
Okay, fine. I get that, but if Melo ends up staying, then you have to take advantage of this window.
I agree. But I'm just saying, in a box, re-signing him was not a mistake, even if your plan was to quote-unquote rebuild. Because Phil's master plan may have been to see what they could do with Carmelo for 2 years, and if it's not good enough, send him to the Clippers, or send him to the Celtics, or send him to the Cavaliers. And that is not a bad move for a team that wants to rebuild and that has a cornerstone now in Kristaps Porzingis.
Well, if you're going to stick to that quote-unquote rebuilding process, and you're going to get value back for Carmelo Anthony, you're never going to get equal value back, then fine. I can live with that. But if you're going to have Carmelo Anthony here and he's going to stay here,
yeah,
I cannot live with not trying to go for it the next 2 or 3 years then.
No, I agree. That's a good point. Now let me just ask you something real quick. I think we got Spiro up. But before we get there, so Carmelo says he wants to have a say in the decision making. How do you feel about
that? I think he should have input. No, I don't think any player should have full say because that's ridiculous.
Okay.
But should a player like Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, the list goes on. Should those guys have some input? Absolutely. Should you go to Carmelo Anthony and say, listen, you're a guy, you're a scorer, you're a guy who likes the ball here. What would help you? Well, Mr. Jackson, a point guard who can get me the ball in the spots I want would help. Oh, so let's call Mr. Rondo. So, yes, he should have input. Guys like that should have input. Patrick Ewing should have input back in the day. You know, Hakeem Olajuwon, Michael Jordan, input. They shouldn't make the full signings, but should guys like that who are the cornerstones of the franchise and guys who you believe can take you to the next level have input? Yes.
How about as it relates to a head coach?
Yeah, yes and no. Carmelo's 32. He's been around the block. You bring up a guy like Tom Thibodeau. Melo has a relationship with him. Input, same thing, input. He should have input. Doesn't mean he should get what he wants. He should have input because he's the star player. Not because he just deserves it. I think, yeah, input is okay. Now, the GM doesn't have to go with what that player said, but should that player be allowed some input? And should you listen to that player? Yeah.
And just to be clear, he should have input, right? That's
input, not like full say.
He said input like a million
times. Yeah, I want to be clear. I'm not saying Melo or LeBron or any of these guys shouldn't make the decisions. But they should have input.
I think Carmelo said he wants a say, quote unquote.
That's okay. A say is okay.
Carmelo, I think, is losing faith in the organization.
Yeah, he would even say he was confident. He goes, I wouldn't use the word confident.
Yeah. And he was specifically asked if he thinks that the Knicks are going to be a championship contender next few years. He said, I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know either.
And it's fair. How could he know? And in light of that, I think it is completely fair for Carmelo to say, hey, man, do y'all really know what y'all doing over there?
And that's fair.
Tom Thibodeau was out there. Y'all going to hire Kurt Rambis for real?
Yeah.
No, I can understand.
I still can't believe that there's a chance on opening night Kurt Rambis is going to be the head coach of the New York Knicks. I don't mean to knock Kurt, but it just doesn't make any sense. It's mind-boggling.
I'm just looking at you and smiling.
This may be one of the worst hires ever, if it happens. Now, who knows? Maybe Phil's trolling us all, and maybe in a few weeks there'll be a press conference for Tom Thibodeau or Scott Brooks. Maybe there will be. But if it goes the way we think it's going to go, then why didn't you hire Kurt to start? If you loved Kurt Rambis that much, why didn't you hire Kurt?
Oh, come on.
I don't want that. I'm just saying if you loved him that much, why did you hire him to start?
Phil would have gotten crushed if he made Kurt
no question. I'm just throwing it out there.
During the middle of the season. There's no way he could have done that. But it is, to your point, it's like, well, did Kurt's performance over the final couple of months of this season sort of show you that he's capable of leading this team? Not really. So you're going to hire him anyway?
Well,
hard to justify.
Well, a guy who spent some time actually around Kurt Rambis, he did the play-by-play for the Los Angeles Lakers from 05 to 2011, the New York Knicks from 2011 to 2014, and you can also catch him now doing college basketball on CBS. He does football. He does everything, and that is my good friend Spiro Dedis joining us right now on the Knicks Blog Podcast. Spiro, how are you, man?
Hey, guys. Anthony, what's going on, brother?
Nothing much, man. So do you do baseball, too, now?
No baseball, just hoops and football for me.
And you do a fantastic job, no doubt about that. So we were just talking about Kurt Rambis, so let's start right there. You were around Kurt Rambis a lot, 2005 to 2011, when he was an assistant for the Los Angeles Lakers. There's a chance he's the head coach for the New York Knicks next year. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it was easy to see traveling with the team when I was with the Lakers from 05 to 11. It was easy to see quickly that, A, Phil and Kurt were very close. You know, as we've heard, and I kind of heard from afar before I got the job, Phil was, you know, kind of a guy who liked to, you know, to be on his own. You know, not a guy who's going to be rambunctious and, you know, out with big groups of people. He kind of sticks to a very small circle. And it was very evident that Kurt was a trusted confidant and that they really kind of saw the game of basketball in the same vein. And I think when you're a coach, that obviously is kind of tantamount to your success, surrounding yourself on your staff with guys that share the same kind of vision. And I think as the years have gone on, they've grown even closer. Their significant others are basically best friends. You know, that has kind of played into it as well. And Phil has made no apologies for the fact that he thinks the world of Kurt, and he thinks that he could be the guy for the job in New York long term.
Spiro, a parallel that I've drawn is Dwayne Casey. You know, Dwayne Casey was the head man out in Minnesota for a while, didn't really have much of a team out there. He goes to Toronto, and he takes over for Jay Triano, right? The first 2 years under Casey, the Raptors didn't do well. But now those next 3 years, each year, Casey basically does a Stephen Curry, where he helps that team to a single season best win total, right, in franchise history. So my question with Kurt is, some people look at what he did with the Timberwolves and they're like, oh, well, this guy can't coach. But how much of it really is his fault? You know, does he deserve another shake as the head man for the New York Knicks?
You know, who's to say he doesn't, guys? And look, I've read all the papers. I know what people are saying out there that Kurt doesn't deserve this. And, you know, a guy like Tom Thibodeau is out there. You know, look, you make a pretty strong case that Tibbs should be given serious consideration, and it doesn't seem like he's been given any consideration at this point. You know, as far as Kurt, he's had a couple of chances. He's been an interim. He's been a head guy. But show me a team that Kurt had that was laden with talent, you know, that severely underachieved. I mean, should they have been a little bit better in Minnesota? Sure. You know, of course. I'm sure, you know, if you sat Kurt down privately and asked him about, you know, some of the past seasons he's had an opportunity to be the head coach, you know, he'd say that he wishes they would have done a little better. But, you know, to sit here and trash him and say that he's not the guy with 100% certainty, I don't know that you can say that. You know, is he the sexy choice? No. Well, obviously he's not. And I think you've seen the evidence of that with the kind of the public reaction and some of the statements that even some of the players have made. So, you know, this is the part of the job of being an executive that is hard, right? I mean, you have to make decisions sometimes that are unpopular. We can sit and argue who the best candidate is for the job. I mean, I personally like Kurt. I want to see him succeed. I think he's a good guy. He's a guy that stuck true to his convictions about the game. And, you know, I'd like to see him succeed. But, you know, it's hard to ignore a guy like Tom Thibodeau who's waiting in the wings, a guy who knows what it's like to coach in New York, knows what it's like to deal with the media in that city, which is a huge, huge part of the job, as you guys know. You know, when you coach a professional team in that city. And, you know, he's just kind of out there, and he's made it clear that he was very interested in that job. So I think that just adds the pressure now that's on Phil's shoulders to kind of navigate through, you know, his own personal feelings about who the coach should be, and also about setting up the franchise guys for the future, even after maybe Phil is no longer there. I know he's got a couple of more years left on his deal, but there's been a lot of speculation of how long he'll stick around. You know, is this about short-term success, or is this about finding the right long-term solution and setting up the franchise for the years after he's gone?
Spiro, we know when Phil Jackson was a coach, he had the best players. He ran the triangle offense. But he's not the coach right now, and he obviously wants to run his system, his offense. What are your thoughts about a guy who's sitting 5-6 rows from the court calling the shots for what offense the coach needs to run?
You know, this is an argument, guys, that we've been having for a long time. And really, I think it applies in other sports as well. You know, is it the coach's responsibility to tailor his system to his personnel, or is it the other way around? You know, do you believe in a system wholeheartedly and to the degree that you basically say, this is what we're going to run no matter who our personnel is, no matter how they're adapting to it? And that's kind of the age-old question, you know. And, you know, when you're a Phil Jackson that has had success in a certain system for as long as he has and to the degree to which he's had, you know, it's hard to disagree with how he feels the game should be played and how you can achieve success at the highest level. Now, you know, with how things ended up with Derek Fisher and some of the things Derek said kind of on his way out, that, you know, I never was really given a chance to put my stamp on this team. And a lot of that had to do with the offensive system that Phil made it very clear from day one he wanted run here. And I think that, you know, it didn't put Phil kind of in the best light as an executive overseeing a team. I mean, Phil's whole thing was, look, I want Derek to be his own man and to kind of find his way as a head coach. But when you're kind of telling your rookie head coach, it's this system or basically the highway, you know, that's not really setting a good precedent for a working relationship kind of in the early days. So, you know, this is all kind of the water under the bridge at this point, and it's something that they have to go through. But one thing I'll give Phil credit for, you know, he is sticking to his convictions. I mean, he's saying that this is the system I want to run. This is the system I think that'll enable us to find that long-term success. We just need to figure out who the right long-term coach is and get the right players in here.
All right, so Spiro, we're about to do a little pivot here, right? Because you're talking about systems. I know you were on hand for the final game of Kobe Bryant's career as a man that spent so much time in Los Angeles. Got to get your perspective on this. So that system that Byron Scott was running in Kobe's last game, what was that? That's like, give it to Kobe and let him chuck up 50 shots. That was amazing. But Spiro, I want to talk to you about, talk to me about that game in particular. You ever been a part of anything like that? I can only imagine what it was like to have been there.
You know, guys, I've 6 years doing the Laker games. I had the incredible fortune to be in that building on some unbelievable nights. You know, the 81-point game was 3 months into my first year with the team.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, four straight games of 50-plus points in 2008.
Remember that?
Yeah, the 62-point game in three quarters against Dallas. You know, the same year he had the 81. You know, they're games that as the years have gone on, you almost forget about. You know, I don't think people talk enough about that four straight games of 50-plus.
Yeah, that was incredible. Ridiculous.
It was absolutely incredible.
61 at the Garden?
Yeah, 61 at the Garden. I was there for that, you know.
I was there
but
for
just
that
to be in the arena the other night, you know, because we all went in just hoping that he would, you know, his legs wouldn't give out and that he'd have a couple of moments where the crowd would be on the edge of their seat. No one anticipated that. I mean, it was like we stepped into a time warp and it was, you know, 2006 or 2007 all over again. That final stretch of 3 minutes,
yeah, he was like five, something like that.
And those points were in the confines of the basketball game.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was the fact that they were doing it, you know, in a game that they were down, you know, in the closing seconds, just kind of added to the drama. But those last 3 minutes, I mean, we were sitting kind of behind the bench, and
I was just kind of scanning
the crowd, looking out. I mean, I saw strangers hugging each other. I saw people crying. You know, grown men crying. I mean, there was one dude who was just like high-fiving people running around, and it was, people were losing their minds because you know, not only was it incredible to see a guy, you know, with that kind of skill and hit those shots, but you're knowing that you're seeing this legendary basketball icon play, you know, the final minutes of a 20-year career, and it was the storybook endings of storybook endings, but it was unbelievable, and it was vintage Kobe. I mean, to go out with 60 in his last game of a 20-year career at his age is astounding.
But Spiro, you mentioned seeing grown men crying, man. We see grown men crying in Madison Square Garden all the time. but usually for
a different reason.
Spiro, you were around Kobe so much from 2005 to 2011. What's something really interesting you found out about Kobe Bryant that you didn't know before that made you maybe respect him or admire him even more?
Well, you know, I've told people this, that before I got the job, I really was not a big Kobe guy. You know, I saw, obviously, him have the success, you know, with the first three championships with Shaq and those great teams. But there was a lot of him, yeah, as a kind of outside observer that I didn't like. You know, he just seemed like a selfish guy, volume shooter. You know, it was all about him too much of the time. And that was kind of a turnoff for me. But I have to say, being around him, you know, as the years went on and seeing, you know, in the NBA with all the apathy, you know, you see all these guys take nights off, you know, want to be buddy buddies with others. And you know, the priorities sometimes are not what they should be. And as I've covered this game, you know, as the years have gone on and I've seen other guys and how they approach their job, I have newfound respect for Kobe, and it just seems to be going up every day, you know, but with the way he works and his singular purpose in the game, and that was to win. You know, he didn't care about being friends. I know there, you know, this last couple of go around and last couple of years has kind of been a love fest where all the other stars have really publicly said that he was their hero and all that. But, you know, there was a long time in the NBA where guys didn't like him. You know, they felt like he would try to show you up, wasn't a good teammate, all that. You know, that was all part of the evolution, I think, of the player that he ultimately became and the man that he became. But I always respected him for that. you know, that it was about winning. And I think some of the reasons why he wasn't a good teammate and wasn't nice to guys, you know, my first couple of years, like 05, 06, was because he didn't really respect him. You know, he didn't think Smush Parker was worthy of being his teammate. And, you know, it was amazing. When I first got the job, he would sit in the back of the plane away from the players would all be in the front. He would have his own place in the back. And it kind of struck me. I'm like, this is weird. I mean, this is not the kind of dynamic that you'd expect between teammates. But I really felt like it was because he was just in a bad mood. I mean, it was like he was protesting to everyone that these guys aren't good enough. And, you know, that caused a lot of people to dislike him. I mean, this guy, is who does he think he is, right? But it's also a reason why I think people in this town love him, because he almost speaks for them. I mean, when the team is not going well here, this whole city is in an uproar. I mean, unless you've lived in L.A., it's hard to kind of know how important this franchise is to this city. And he's as polarizing an athlete and a player, I think, as we've had in any sport, you know, in the last who knows how many years. And it was never a dull moment covering him, that's for sure.
Spiro, when the Lakers started winning again in the late 2000s, did people sit with Kobe on the plane then and the bus?
Yes. Then he started to become a little bit better of a teammate. Started to go out to dinner with him.
Right.
And everything changed when Powell was traded for in February of 08. And I think you quickly saw in him that spark come back, that he, you know, he realized, okay, we have enough now to get back to the NBA mountaintop. And that's all he cared about. That at the end of the day, all the great scoring games and all that was fun and exciting. But for him, it was always about stacking up championships and winning, and that's all that mattered to him. And I think that's why you have to kind of respect him. Love him or hate him, you know, you have to respect him.
It's so funny, Spiro. So Pau Gasol was actually able to have dinner with Kobe Bryant, right?
Yes.
Spiro, man, great job as always. Could talk to you all day, man, but thank you so much for giving us some time today on the show.
Anytime, guys.
Take care. That was Spiro Dedis joining us right here on the Knicks Blog Podcast. Did the play-by-play for the Lakers from 2005 to 2011 and the Knicks from 2011 to 2014.
I missed Spiro at the Garden.
He was awesome.
He dressed sharp too, boy.
Yeah, he was awesome.
I should have told him that while we had him on air, man.
The Knicks went from Gus Johnson to Spiro Dedis, man. Two of the best in the game.
Yeah, we're going to have to
back to back.
We're going to have to post a picture of Spiro with the shoes. Spiro used to have some bad shoes at the Garden, man. Kobe's game was so amazing that nobody even cared about the fact that the Warriors won 73 games.
Oh, no, nobody. I didn't care about the Warriors game. And then all I cared about was watching the Lakers. And it was
because you kind of knew they were going to do it.
No question. And the Lakers was amazing theater. Check out the Four Quarters podcast with Adam Zagoria and Josh Newman. This week, they spoke with former St. John's head coach and ESPN broadcaster Fran Fraschilla. Plus, the guys discussed the biggest players at the Jordan Brand Classic, which is going to be at the Barclays Center. To listen to the show, go to zagsblog.com or subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network, which I talked about that earlier in the show, where you can access not only our show and the Four Quarters podcast, but also our original podcast, the Mets, the Jets, the Islanders, the Rangers, and of course this show, the Knicks Blog Podcast with Moak and I.
All right, brother, man, we've been waiting for this for a while now.
Now this is for lunch at Pizza Suprema.
Yes, it is. All right, playoff time.
And loser has to buy it for me, you, and Jason Pateri.
And Matt.
And Matt Cerrone.
Yeah. And maybe one other guy. How about the loser just buys a box, and whoever wants to get a slice gets a slice?
Sounds good.
Maybe two boxes.
Two pies and a couple meatball rolls in the calzone.
All right, so let's get into it, man. We got the first round matchups right here in front of us.
Yes, we do.
So I'm going to start at the bottom of the list. You got 4-5 out in the Western Conference, Clippers and Trailblazers. I'm taking the Clippers.
Okay.
I'm taking them in 5 games. Then Trailblazers is going to get 1 game from them. I got the Thunder and the Mavericks. I'm going to give the Mavericks 2 games in that series, but I'm going with the Thunder in 6.
Okay.
I'm taking the Spurs to sweep the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies don't even win 1 game in that series. And I'm going to take the Warriors in 5 over the Rockets. I give the Rockets 1 game.
So now I'm going to do my Western Conference playoff predictions. I'm going to go with the Clippers in 5 over the Portland Trailblazers. Portland, a nice story, but the Clippers are just much better Oklahoma City in five over the Mavericks. Dirk will get them one game, but the Mavericks are just not good enough. San Antonio should demolish Memphis in four, maybe five, just because Memphis has heart. They might.
No. I don't want to hear that, man. You better pick one.
San Antonio beats Memphis in five games.
Oh, you give Memphis.
And then
a game.
Golden
right.
State will beat Houston in five. I think Houston gets one on the strength of James Harden catching fire. So right now, we all have all picked the same. So now go to the Eastern Conference, Mo, and you start.
But the difference is you gave Memphis a game.
I did. Okay. I did. So.
All right, out east, I'm taking in the 4-5, I'm taking the Hawks over the Celtics.
Interesting.
I'm going to take the Hawks. I think the Celtics are going to, that could go 7, but I'm going to go Hawks in 6 there.
Okay.
The Heat are going to beat my Hornets down in Charlotte.
Your Hornets.
My Hornets.
Because of Kemba?
Because of Kemba.
That's fine.
I'm going to take the Heat in 6 games.
Okay.
I'm going to take the Raptors over the Pacers. I'm going to take the Raptors in 6 games as well. I'm going to take the Cavaliers. I'm going to take the Cavs to sweep the Pistons.
All right, so my Eastern Conference playoff prediction. So basically we're really just betting on one series because I'm going to take the Celtics over the Hawks. The Hawks got to the conference finals last year.
The Celtics over the Hawks.
I like the way the Celtics play. They play hard. They play tough. I know they don't have that really, really true go-to guy, even though Isaiah can be that sometimes.
Hawks don't really have that either, though.
They don't right now either.
Maybe Paul Millsap.
So, yeah, but he's not that guy. So I'm going to go with Boston in 7 over the Hawks. I'm going to take the Miami Heat in 6 over the Charlotte Hornets, your Charlotte Hornets. I'm going to take the Toronto Raptors in 5 over the Indiana Pacers. And I'm going to take the Cleveland Cavaliers in 5 over the Detroit Pistons.
Okay, so we differ on the games, but there's only
one series.
So you got the Celtics, I got the Hawks.
So we should just really just bet on that series.
You want to do that, Jay?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, we might as well just do that.
All right, so the winner of that series determines who has to buy the pizza for
yes,
the dude.
Yes, correct. That's fair.
Who you got in the finals?
I have the finals. I have the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Golden State Warriors.
Okay, no surprise there. And you taking the Warriors to win that?
Yes, I'm taking the Golden State Warriors.
If I got to pick one team, I'm also going with that, Jay. I'm taking the Warriors over the Cavaliers.
So who would have thought of the 2016 NBA playoffs and our competition, it all comes down to one series, and that is the Celtics versus the Hawks.
Somebody's going to be buying a pizza. I know you got the hookup over there at the pizza shop. But I'm telling you this. If you lose, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to make sure you pay for that
yes,
pizza,
I will.
Okay?
I will.
I'll
pay for it.
We're getting out of here.
As I say that with a smirk.
I guess we're getting out of here on that note then, right?
Well, listen, big thanks to Spiro Dedas for joining us today. Spiro's fantastic. Great talking to him. Mok, excellent job out of you. Excellent job out of our producer, Jason Pateri, as always. Make sure to go to theknicksblog.com for all your great Knicks news. Make sure to check out Mok on basketballinsiders.com. Does fantastic work there.
Thank you.
And also check out Alex and Tommy Beard and all those guys as well. Follow me on Twitter, AnthonyMSG. Snapchat, AnthonyMSGG. Follow Mok on Twitter, at Mok Hamilton.
And we're going to be back next week.
We'll be back next week. And after next week, we'll see what's going on in Knickland to determine when we'll be on. But we'll be back next week. Have a good one, everybody. Take care.
Enjoy those playoffs, too.
This has been the Knicks Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.